The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, Kevin Negandhi with you this Monday. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. We love hearing your opinions and your thoughts. We'll hear from Pollock on Wednesday as we get you ready for some of the early games. And we're going to have the Fighting Reese Davises himself. He's going to join us as well on Wednesday to talk about his performance against Wisconsin. Fantastic stuff there from Coach Fitzgerald and how it's being played out. But, you know, Herbie, with us taping this on Monday, this is kind of setting up to what we anticipate on Tuesday. And Tuesday night is the first release of the college football playoff ranking. And I think we all know that the four teams are going to be up there. The question will be, how does it play out from 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 moving forward? What do you anticipate you're going to see on Tuesday night?
Man, I always feel like there's a wrinkle in the first release every year. And I don't know if in the top four we have a potential wrinkle. You know, I think we all seem to agree that Bama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Clemson seemed it's kind of a unanimous thought coast to coast that those are the four for now. I mean, we still have, you know, a lot of games to be played with 4 weeks to go. But I think that there's no way they can surprise us with that. Even if they slip Clemson up to 3 and Ohio State to 4, which is what I would have, I don't think you're going to necessarily be shocked. I think the drama is 5, 6, 7, 8, and even 9, and maybe 10. I mean, I really want to see how they stack these teams up because the Pac-12's only had 3 weeks to show what they can do. Nobody's talking about USC. I mean, USC is sitting there at 19 in the AP. And yet they're 3-0, and I'm not saying that they're worthy of being up in the top 10, but I wouldn't be shocked, as an example, that the committee looks at them maybe differently than everybody else is looking at them. And, you know, sometimes in the AP poll, you're punished because if you don't start on the radar, you're punished. It takes weeks to build up. Other teams losing in front of you to move up. I've noticed with the committee, they don't do that. And so, let's see what they do with the Pac-12, USC, and Oregon. We've talked all year about Cincinnati and BYU and how do you split those two. I think Cincinnati, with the win over UCF, probably moves up above BYU, who I'm in love with. I love the BYU team. And then I think the other question is Florida lost to A&M at Kyle Field. They had COVID issues after that loss. And to be candid, they have been a completely different team since that was, I think, week 3. And now they've played 4 straight games where I don't know if anybody's playing better than them. I know they got off to a slow start at Sleepy Vandy, but other than that, they are taking names. And so how do they handle that? Do they just do what everyone else is doing? Oh, give A&M the nod because they won the head-to-head? It would make sense. Or do you go with, man, Florida's a different team today than they were when they lost against Texas A&M. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see that discussion because A&M, it's nothing that they've done wrong, but you know, they've been postponed because of COVID over the last 2 weeks. They missed a Tennessee and Ole Miss game. They'll finally play against LSU this weekend. But they've a little bit out of sight, out of mind, other than that win against Florida. That might be the only reason they stay ahead of the Gators in the first release.
And the room changes every year, so we'll learn a little bit too. Is are they letting their eyes play a role here and telling them, hey, what we're seeing from a team now of late, or do we go back to what we saw just a few weeks ago when A&M played Florida? That plays a role here on understanding the thought process. And again, it's going to be subjective. That's what this whole thing is about. That's why we moved on from the BCS. We want opinions, we want thoughts, and how do they see this together as a room? The interesting thing about USC too, right, is Arizona State, they open up, and that's an opener for both of them. But then Arizona, it's Arizona's opener. Then it's Utah and Utah's opener. And now they take on Colorado, which is undefeated. So we'll learn a little bit more about USC and where they're at by the end of this weekend, I think, against Colorado. And let's go back to the BYU thing, because the BYU storyline is that's tied into the Pac-12, where Washington, I love this concept where the conference is understanding you could play out of conference if you could find somebody to schedule. And there's an opportunity there for BYU to showcase again, because we're only going to see them one more time in December. And I go back to another thing, and I'm going to play this out to you, Herbie. Cincinnati, they looked really good against UCF. I think that's going to be their most challenging game. They've got Temple next, and they have an open date on December 5th. And when you look at BYU, the next time we see them play, now granted, they're 9-0. The next time we see them play is December 12th. And wouldn't it be kind of cool, this concept of, hey, December 5th, Cincinnati and BYU, now much to lose potentially, but we can get a better idea that, hey, if you guys aren't in the conversation because you're not part of the Power Five, maybe we could find a way that you guys showcase each other here to get into that conversation the following weekend. What do you think of that?
How 2020 would that be? You know,
yes.
Just an adjustment on the fly. The ADs from the two schools get together. Maybe they are already there. There's some rumblings about that already. Wouldn't that be cool if they made that become a reality right now? And I have no idea what went into Washington getting canceled and Washington and BYU talking. There was thought about maybe BYU and Washington playing this weekend, and BYU, at least as far as reports are, hey, we want to wait and see where things are on Tuesday with the rankings before we make any decision. Boy, that really, if that's true, and I don't know if it is, that really hurts their case of this. We'll play anybody, anywhere, anytime. And all of a sudden, an opening for Washington, go play them. Yep. I don't care if you're Seattle, go play them. I mean, what an opportunity to show in a year where they've been stripped of opportunities against Power Five teams. Boom, one comes right. The first thing I heard when Larry Scott said last week, we're going to be willing to kind of bob and weave here a little bit with scheduling. We're going to, if teams are willing to move and play out of conference and they can pick somebody up. First thing I thought of, because I've liked this BYU team, is wow. Yeah. They only got a couple games left and they're going to have three opening weekends. Maybe there's a possibility that they could get a game played on the 28th or maybe on the 5th or maybe on the 19th. And lo and behold, there's rumblings that, hey, that looks like BYU maybe in Washington, and all of a sudden, they're not going to do it. That really hurts when you're trying to say, hey, throw our hat in the ring. We deserve to be recognized as an elite team. And let's wait until BYU makes an announcement. But that's what you're hearing, that they're kind of turning this down potentially. So that's not good for them. And then if we do get that Cincinnati game, I talked to the Bear about it. He said, why would they do that? Neither team has anything to gain. It's not like the winner of that is assured a spot in the playoff. It's not like, BYU beat Cincinnati. Oh, man, move them over Clemson and Ohio State. That's not going to happen. So you really have the only thing that you could happen is you could be eliminated more than anything. So I as a fan of the sport, if that's a possibility, that would be must-see TV. BYU and Cincinnati, two teams that are on the outside looking in at the top four, one of them survives and gets a chance. And now, you know, what needs to happen, by the way, for that door to open in the top four, you know, with Alabama and Ohio State looking like they, you know, they have games where they're going to be heavily favored until their conference championship games anyway. Notre Dame, if you're keeping score at home and you're not, you know, a fan of any of the teams up front, you're looking for a door to open into the top four, you basically need a Notre Dame loss Friday to North Carolina. If Notre Dame were to lose to North Carolina, now Notre Dame has one loss and Clemson would have one loss going into the ACC championship. And now the loser is out. And now that opens the door for somebody to slide in into the top four. If Notre Dame wins out and they beat North Carolina and they beat Wake and they're in into the ACC championship and they're undefeated and they lose to Clemson, chances are Clemson and Notre Dame are both still going to be in the playoff. So if you're looking for a way for the top four to open, other than Ohio State losing to Northwestern or Bama losing to Florida, that would be what I would see potentially happening.
It's time now for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And Herbie, as we get closer and closer to, of course, December, we're going to have the first playoff release that is on Tuesday night. I'm really curious how it looks for you right now when you talk about your top four.
Well, this is finally where it starts to become a reality, right? We've been talking for a number of weeks now about this, and every week we're going to take a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor. And just to remind folks, the All-State Playoff Predictor projects the top team's chances of making the college football playoff. And I'll be pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with Allstate. You've never been in better hands. And I haven't changed a lot from last week. I'm a little bit different than the Allstate playoff predictor. I have Ohio State down at 4. I'm not necessarily looking, when I rank my teams, I'm not looking at percentage of chances of making the playoff. If that were the case, I would have Ohio State up there at 2-2. Right now, as far as ranking teams, based on what I've seen, I would have Alabama at 1. I would have Notre Dame at 2. I would have Clemson moving ahead of Ohio State at 3. I would have Ohio State at 4. I don't think they're in jeopardy of continuing to lose traction, providing they're able to win the rest of their games. They obviously will be in the playoff. But I think Ohio State has some concerns of all four of those teams, probably the most concerns in the secondary, most notably, and even in pass protection. Those are the two areas I think right now that Ohio State's going to work hard to try to clean up before they get ready to get into the postseason. So those would be my four. And then after that, you know, I've still got Florida, even though I keep bringing up they lost to A&M. I'm just so impressed with the way they're playing. As I continue to say, that'll work itself out one way or the other. Whether Florida wins out and beats Bama, they would go ahead of A&M anyway. Or if they were to lose to Bama, then A&M would get ahead of them at the end. So it's kind of a moot point. And then I've kind of joined the ranks. Cincinnati, I needed to see them against a heavyweight, and watching them, especially defensively against UCF, who can score a lot of points. I gave UC the nod over that BYU team that I've been touting since week one. So UC is, I mean, it's what a cluster of teams after you get out of the top four, when you have Florida and you have A&M, you have BYU. And you got Cincinnati. Now you got Northwestern. We've been talking a lot about Wisconsin, but now you got Northwestern, who's sitting there undefeated, and looking at their schedule, barring an upset, will be undefeated when they get ready for the Big Ten championship. They should walk now to Indy after the way they played against Wisconsin. So let's not forget about the Wildcats and the job that Pat Fitzgerald's doing.
Those Fighting Reese Davises, and we'll have Reese Davis on Wednesday to talk about his performance against the Badgers here on the podcast. Also, the Pac-12 is there in this conversation as we take a look at Alabama 1, Ohio State number 2 when it comes to the percentages in this playoff predictor, Notre Dame at 3, Cincinnati 35% chance to make the playoff, and that is just above Clemson, which is at
33%. How does that happen?
I have no idea.
I mean, we want the record to state that you and I have nothing to do with the Allstate playoff predictor. Cincinnati, God love them. I mean, we just talked about they're right there. But I got a feeling if Clemson wins out, they're not going to be behind Cincinnati. So maybe it's just a percentage of chances of them beating Notre Dame or winning the rest of their games. But in any ranking, I would have Clemson ahead of Cincinnati.
Yeah, and then you got right behind Clemson there on this playoff predictor, Oregon and USC, and I think it's going to flush itself out as the season continues if they're able to play enough games in the Pac-12. So there's a lot on the line here on Friday when we watch North Carolina versus Notre Dame on ABC, and Herbie and Fowler will be on the call. As you get ready for a game like this, I think of Sam Howell. I think of the explosive plays for Carolina. They can answer back with anybody. This defense, and Mac will tell you, this defense has had major problems stopping anybody. What do you anticipate to see in a game like this with Ian Book, who feels like he is in complete command and control, and now he's just a different quarterback after the Clemson experience?
Yeah, he sure has. I think what you're saying about their defense, you know, it's valid. They've got a lot of new faces. They don't have a lot of depth. They have been very inconsistent. There've been times in series when you're watching them where you're like, man, you know, here they are. This is a good defense. In the Wake game, they got down big, and then they had 4 or 5 straight stops to give their offense a chance to come back. So they've shown an ability to do that. But now you get Notre Dame, right? I mean, now you get Clark Lee is a defensive coordinator who's outstanding, and he's had 2 weeks to get healthy and to study film And to get that athletic defense on the same page against a pretty sophisticated Sam Howe offense, because they do a lot. They have the ability to run. They love to stretch you out sideline to sideline with quick passes and perimeter run. And they love to stretch you, and then they can get vertical, as we know. I mean, Sam Howe loves to go downfield and make big plays in the passing game. So I'm excited because on paper, it looks like we could have a lot of points. I mean, it looks like a game the day after Thanksgiving, eating a lot of turkey and watching a lot of football and having a little bit more turkey the day after. And you know, you sit down and there's some really exciting games on Friday. This would be one of them. I think it's at 3:30 Eastern on ABC. I know you'll be doing the studio work that weekend. And this has the makings of a competitive game, two great quarterbacks. And the fact that they both had a couple weeks to get ready, I think really adds to the intrigue of the defenses and how well prepared they might be against the explosiveness of what these offenses can do.
I can't wait. I think entering next season, Howell will be in the top three in any Heisman list. He's that good. He's that exciting. And I want to see how Notre Dame responds after a couple weeks off. Speaking of taking a couple weeks off, and we're going to see Clemson this weekend, hopefully, fingers crossed, taking on Pitt. And it'll be the first time that they'll play since the Notre Dame loss in overtime. And unfortunately, a lot of things took you. You guys were in the middle of it on game day with it's the first time we've seen it all season where a game was canceled the morning of a scheduled date between Florida State and Clemson, and Dabo grabbing the headlines last night with some of the comments that he said that not canceled because of COVID. COVID was just an excuse to cancel the game. I have no doubt their players wanted to play and would have played. And same with the coaches. To me, the Florida State administration forfeited the game. Now, FSU declined to comment on Dabo's comments, but you know, they've gone back and forth here on the what was implied, and the medical personnel on both sides couldn't get on the same page. Clemson saying they followed all required protocols when it traveled with a player who had shown prior symptoms of COVID but did not receive a positive test until the team arrived in Tallahassee on Friday night. Just the stuff that's being said back and forth, is this part of a college football rivalry that is just that's now just even more juiced and maybe not so much on the field of late with the results, but just the back and forth of, you know, these two programs? What was your initial reaction on Saturday, and then how this is being played out after, you know, Dabo's comments last night?
I can't wait for the two teams to get together, you know, whether it's this year or in the future. Dabo clearly was upset. I don't understand all of the protocols. I mean, I'm having a hard enough time keeping up with all the different conferences and the different rules of the local health departments. You know, I look at Cal Berkeley, for example, thinking, I don't know. I think they've had one player that's tested, and yet here they are struggling to play games, you know, and contact tracing issues. And so I guess Florida State's issue was with a player that had some symptoms throughout the week that was testing negative and then finally tested positive on Friday. And by then, you know, they had already headed to Tallahassee. So Florida State, I guess, felt, well, there's no way to really know where this player, who he's been around and who he's potentially affected by that potential virus spreading. And they didn't want their players to be around that, I guess, is what I understand. And Dabo's saying players test positive, you know, day of all the time. What's the big deal? You know, you sit him down and whoever's been in contact tracing with that player, you move on and play. And we have seen that throughout the country where you expect a certain player to be on the field and then he's not. Davis Mills, the starting quarterback of Stanford, we were getting ready to do the Stanford-Oregon game. And, you know, a few hours before the game, oh, well, he tested positive, him and his roommate are out. And Stanford played their backup quarterback. So we see it all the time. It's just a little bit there. Maybe there's more to it than we realize. But all I know is Dabo was heated.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't hide his emotions and his feelings. And, you know, Clemson used to be, or Florida State used to be the Clemson of the ACC. And now there's a new sheriff in town. And you got a new head coach in Tallahassee who's trying to create a new culture. And this kind of adds to the spice of what's already, I feel like, a pretty good natural rivalry. And I don't know if they're going to play this year. I have no idea if it'll work out. But sign me up. Can't wait to watch.
Exactly. Yeah. Down the road. Yeah. How this plays out for future games is what I want to see. And who knows if they're going to play. You know, they've mentioned it that, you know, they spent $300,000 for the travel to come down there. They're ready to go. And you mentioned the uniqueness here of we saw this in the Pac-12 and how Stanford handled it. I mean, in the American this past weekend with Temple had a game and they had a guy, one of their players' girlfriends tested positive, and they had to stall the kickoff against East Carolina because they had to get the player back on campus and for an antigen test, and they weren't sure. They had to stall the game for an hour before to figure out who was around that player and the contact tracing, but they still played. And they had 51 scholarship players, and so each conference is different. Like you said, each region is different when it comes to the testing, and the ACC is following what the CDC rules are. So I think that as this story continues, you know, we will get more information coming out on what exactly happened. And right now there's just so much speculation on why they did it and what's behind it. The one thing we do know is the next game, sign us up, whenever it's going to happen, whether it's this year or next season, there is going to be a lot of bad blood brewing heading into the contest. Let's go to the Big Ten, because there were two games there that we had circled, undefeateds battling in the East, undefeateds battling in the West. What did you learn about Ohio State, Indiana after that game?
Couple things. Number one, Indiana's legit. Indiana is a legitimate top 10 team this year. It's not a cute little story. It's not, boy, Tom Allen, he's like the Dick Vermeil of college football in 2020. No, no, no. This program, he's been building this. They're legit, man. They got a backbone. They got playmakers. They got a quarterback that's got a lightning quick release and he's accurate. And he's got guys that if you leave them one-on-one on the perimeter, they're going to win. I'm just surprised they haven't been able to run the ball better, because their back, Stevie Scott's a physical monster to give them balance, but they've just not been able to do it. And they still are scoring on people. I knew going in that Ohio State's secondary was a question mark. And I thought they'd arrive in a bad mood because of all the hype about Indiana. And I thought they'd take a step up. Instead, they showed who they are right now. They're vulnerable on the back end. There's no question about it. That's the reality of where Ohio State is right now as the top four team in the country. They've got issues on the back end. And if they don't get home, which they don't have Chase Young, they don't have Nick Bosa. You know, they don't have guys that are difference makers up front. They got hard workers. They got grinders. They got guys that occasionally will get in there, but they're needing the blitz to get pressure. They can't just rely on four. So you combine that with a secondary that is vulnerable, and that's Ohio State. That's where Ohio State is, and that's what they're going to try to shore up between now and the end of the year. Indiana, to me, I don't know how you can watch Indiana play Ohio State. And they were down 35-7, and they get this within a possession at 42-35, and they're closing like a great thoroughbred down the stretch. They are closing within, they were back, you know, they're back 5 lengths, 4 lengths, 3 lengths, 2 lengths, 1 length, and the finish line. I mean, they were coming hard at the end. And I just thought, I walked away thinking, if Indiana was already ranked, whatever they were, 9th, how do you watch them and play in that game on the road down 35-7? And walk away thinking, oh, no, no, they got to drop. That's, oops, hold on.
I love it.
So I don't know how you watch them and think, oh, yeah, you got to drop them after the way they played in that game. You know, for me, I watch them and think, man, I was more impressed with Indiana, right? I mean, that's Ohio State. They were Justin Fields. How many times did they hit Justin Fields? I mean, Justin Fields has been throwing – this year, most passes, like he's back there. I don't want to say like 7-on-7, but you know, he's back there with time, or he's moving and he's throwing without duress. And Indiana hit him a lot. And even when they didn't hit him, they affected and made him move out of the pocket, especially on third down. So the things that we all learned about that game, Ohio State's secondary, lack of consistent pass rush, and the Ohio State offensive line and pass protection are potential areas that could hurt them. And what we learned about Indiana is this Indiana team is for real. They got a quarterback in Penix. They got receivers. And they got a defense that's underrated. I know they gave up points, but who doesn't against Ohio State and Fields and those receivers? But, man, they will fight you. They will punch you in the nose. They'll take a few punches, and they will not back down. I just don't know how they drop after the performance that they had. They got Maryland, who's tricky. You know, that's a tricky game for them on an early kick this weekend. They still have to go to Wisconsin. They still have Purdue. So they've got a grind of a schedule. But if they can pick up the pieces emotionally and finish off with three wins, they are very deserving of consideration of a New Year's Six or knocking on the door of a big-time bowl game. This Indiana team is very good, and you could maybe argue they're second-best team in the Big Ten.
I'm 100% with you, you know, especially in that second half. I mean, they shut out Ohio State in the fourth quarter. And coming into the game, you know, Fields had, what, 11 incompletions? He had 12 in this game. And my biggest thing was, can Indiana, because their defense in the previous games leading into it, they were a team that creates turnovers. And for them to have three interceptions, it just makes you wonder, too. They had two costly turnovers in the red zone. And they still made it a 7-point game. It's one of those things that they made those mistakes early. And like you said, they didn't blink in that second half. They came back and Penix, man, they showed me a heck of a lot. And I'm with you that I think they're the second best team. And I know now before we continue, the Northwestern faithful are going to jump in and say, oh, there goes ESPN. Joey Galloway's not on this podcast. Northwestern coming off that win against Wisconsin, the difference between, I think, Indiana and Northwestern right now is that we know that when Indiana comes out, Indiana can find a way to score points. I'm not saying Northwestern cannot, but I think that the firepower that the Hoosiers have with the two wide receivers, with that quarterback, Indiana can go toe-to-toe with anybody. And with that, what are your thoughts on how Northwestern beat Wisconsin? Because it felt like a typical Pat Fitzgerald type of game. We'll have one or two explosive plays, and then we will grind you out in the second half. Your thoughts on what you learned about Northwestern and Wisconsin?
Well, I think going in, one of the things I said, I can't remember if I said it on the podcast. I know I said it on game day several times. Mike Hankwitz just has Paul Chryst's number schematically. It's just it's a matchup that allows Northwestern. Going into the game, Paul Chryst is a head coach and play caller. 3-2 against Northwestern, and his offenses have averaged 20 points a game. That was going into the game. Now his top two receivers, if with anything we learned about Wisconsin, is they do not have depth at receiver. And you take out Kendrick Pryor and Danny Davis, and you're dealing with just young players and inexperienced players. And I think that got exposed. We can look at Graham Mertz all we want. I was looking more at the lack of big playability from the wide receivers. And give Northwestern all the credit. You know, this whole stuff about Reese Davis and all that. Man, we've been complimenting Pat Fitzgerald for years on the program that he has built in Evanston. We've been complimenting their athletic department, the facility that they put in, the commitment that they've made to this program. Last year, it was an aberration. They were 3-9. They had so many injuries. They didn't have an offense. You knew that they would come back. And so they've been, even through this pandemic and quarantine and the season's called off and is back on, they've showed up clearly with a chip on their shoulder. And Joey saying, I just see a bunch of Reese Davises, clearly was a rallying point for this team that already had a chip. And they're 3-9. So Northwestern Twitter and all the noise, like, chill out. Like, mm-hmm. People have been affecting your brand forever. I mean, it's as simple as that. And you know what? When you look at your offense and what you're doing, it's efficient, but it's not an offense that's going to go out there and blow you away. I mean, they're scoring 25 a game, and they're not. If you look at the game that they had offensively, they play complementary football on offense. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're not trying to do a whole lot as far as spreading you out, trying to throw vertically or anything. But it works for them. I mean, it complements their defense and dominating that side of the ball. When you're giving up 12 points a game on that side of the ball and you're creating turnovers, you don't really need to do a whole lot from where they were last year to where they are right now. They're obviously much better, but it's defense, it's turnover margin, it's
being smart on the offensive side, not turning it over, not making critical mistakes, winning field position. It seems like the ball is always on the opponent's side of the field. So they're doing old school stuff and it's effective and they're a confident team. And so, but I don't know. This whole thing about if they need to use that as a rallying point, so be it. But give me a break on people not respecting this team and this program. Those of us who follow the sport, we have poured over compliment over after compliment of this program led by Pat Fitzgerald. So they got work to do. I mean, they got Michigan State, Minnesota, and Illinois. I mean, I don't know how the way they're playing right now. I really don't know how they lose any of those games. There's a very, very strong possibility that they're going into Indianapolis and the Big Ten championship against Ohio State, where they're going to be 8-0. Now, do they, all the things we just talked about with Ohio State, offensive line, pass protection, defensive line, not getting a home, secondary vulnerable against a pass. Do they have what it takes to expose Ohio State, to get after Ohio State? I don't know if they're wired. I don't know if they're wired offensively to take advantage of some of Ohio State's liabilities, but their defense against Justin Fields will be must-see TV. I mean, that's what you would want to watch if these two teams end up heading and getting together in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and we love Joey Galloway, by the way. And I actually love the idea that I think they've reached out to try to get Joey on a conference call with them. I think this is a really good fodder for a couple of days. And if it carries out, like you said, then it's like, come on guys, right? Like, hey, we're not sleeping on you. This is not like a surprise to any of us that have seen the track record of Fitzgerald at Northwestern. The one thing that I got from that Ohio State game too, as well, Herbie, I'm not sure how you feel about it, but it felt like they discovered that Master Teague is the guy in the backfield, right? Because when things were not working, hey, we're gonna get some chunk yards here with Teague behind us. I think that plays a huge role in the next couple of weeks, and then leading into that battle against Northwestern, like you mentioned, potentially in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's the biggest difference within the Ohio State offensive structure is Ryan Day and Justin Fields, man, last year. And I don't know if you watched the Ravens Titans game yesterday, but it was another reminder of what J.K. Dobbins is and what he was to the Ohio State offense. I mean, you put a guy in the backfield that every time his hands touch the ball, it's hold your breath, because he's going to go 20. If you're lucky, he's only going to go 20. And if you're not lucky, he's going to go 50 or 80. And you take that out, and now you're going to bring in a thumper. Boom, boom, boom. I mean, that's what he is, Teague is. And it's a different kind of offense. He's going to wear on you. At least that's the goal for Ohio State, is it's like more like a body blow instead of a Mike Tyson uppercut. And that's what Ohio State now has with Teague and, to a certain extent, Sermon. But really, Teague's going to have to become the guy, I think, for Ohio State's offense. But they need balance. And I think Fields, I know he's got an NFL future. And we saw a little bit Saturday when Ohio State started to get stressed late. His legs are going to have to, without the dynamic playmaking ability in the backfield of having a Dobbins, he's going to have to, down the stretch, he will need to run the ball 10 to 12 times a game and try to provide some of that potential explosiveness in the running game, where you get plus one because they don't have the numbers right in the box. I mean, he's going to have to do that, but it'd be interesting to see. I mean, Ohio State still a very, very good team, dynamic offense of threats at the skill spots at receiver and quarterback. But I'm sure Ryan Day has not slept very well. This is not the only game where some of these things have surfaced. If you watched even times Rutgers, if you watched the second half against Penn State, earlier in the year than that there have just been some moments where you just kind of looked at them. And by the way, they've raised the bar themselves so high with the teams that they've had, 14, 15. I mean, you go down the stretch of teams they've had. So that's kind of much like Alabama and Clemson. When you watch Ohio State, you're comparing Ohio State not just to 2020 teams, you're comparing Ohio State to who they were last year and who they were the year before that. So the bar is very, very high for players that eventually get a chance to play. Think of the corner play
Damon Arnett, I watched him last night against Patrick Mahomes, holding his own against Travis Kelce. That was one of their corners. Jeffrey Okuda was like a top five pick. I mean, and before that, I mean, line them up, man. Look, think of the corners that they've had. And right now, Sean Wade and Selvin Banks, they're trying to just hold on and instead of dominating the way Ohio State has in the past. That secondary right now looks very different than what it's looked like over the last, I don't know, 6-7 years.
And like you mentioned earlier, and when we broke it down, they don't have a Chase Young there to help that secondary, right?
Yep.
In the front. So it, to me, it sets up what potentially could be a phenomenal game later in December in that matchup against Wisconsin. I mean, against Northwestern, if things go as planned. And then when we look at the schedule here, you got the Iron Bowl, and the Iron Bowl is always special. I don't care where Auburn is. I don't care where Alabama is in their program on the season. It's just always a special event. We've got that coming up, and Auburn's, you know, ranked 22nd in the land. But when you see Bama, Herbie, 52 points, 63 points, 41 points, 48 points, 41, 63. This offense, they're the most complete, I think, offense around because of Najee Harris, of course, but Mac Jones and Devontae Smith and all the weapons that they have. Coming into a game like this, how do you anticipate Alabama getting ready, or how do you anticipate Auburn getting ready and that defense getting ready for the Tide?
Well, I'm hoping, since I won't be with you on the podcast later this week, that you're able to remind David Pollack that he said Alabama was the word he used was done, emphatic, done, D-O-N-E was what he said. And I'm going to make sure I remind him of that on Saturday. Since they were quote unquote done, they've scored 48 at Knoxville, 41 against Mississippi State, 63 against Kentucky, who's not a bad defense. And now they've got Auburn. So the reason I was arguing, obviously Jalen Waddle's a special player. And at that time, he was the guy that was making a lot of plays along with Devontae Smith. But when you lose a guy like that, Alabama's caliber of a program and play caller and Steve Sarkisian, they're never done. They're never done. Now, do they have to recalibrate? Absolutely. That's what anybody does when they lose a high profile, maybe the most electrifying player in the country. Yeah, it hurts, but you know what? It changes things. It changes your approach. Devontae Smith is still going to go out there and get touches. He's still going to be a guy that is very capable of being the top receiver in the country. Mac Jones is still going to be efficient. Maybe you rely a little bit more on the running of Najee Harris, maybe a little bit more, you know, RPO stuff and the ability to get Mitchie matched up one-on-one. This Slade Bolden is not a bad receiver. The tight ends are a little bit more involved. So it just changed how they're attacking. It doesn't mean that their offense is still not very, very capable, obviously, of doing amazing things. So Auburn, Kevin Steele, you know, he always seems to be competitive. It's always a fun game because of the history of it. I love it. I'm like you. It's one of those games for me. I don't care what the records are. I don't care about we're in the middle of a pandemic. I don't care about anything. I'll be tuned in. I love Alabama, Auburn. I love its history. I love the uniforms on the same field together. I love it all. I'll take every ounce of everything that game has to offer every year. And Auburn, to me, it's one of those games that whoever's heavily favored needs to be careful because whatever that's it. Easy win never is an easy win. So hold on to your hat if you're a Bama fan, because I'd rather be at a pick'em game and that kind of rivalry than a game where you're expected to blow out your opponent. So I can't wait for Saturday to watch that one.
Can't wait for Friday. We got that double dip on ABC, Iowa State, Texas. That has a lot of background, a lot of stuff for Tom Herman as well as Iowa State, as they're on track, of course, to potentially play in the Big 12 championship game, so they can't afford a loss. And then, of course, we've got North Carolina, Notre Dame that we just talked about, and you guys are on the call. Have a great Thanksgiving, bud. Safe travels, of course, for the game on Friday, and then, of course, game day heading into the weekend.
Yep. Have a great Thanksgiving for you and your family, everybody out there. And let's just keep knocking on wood. I told Chris Fowler and maybe Reese Davis, I said, you know, college football, it's like we're bouncing off of guardrails. We're just, you know, it's kind of like a microcosm of society. We're just trying to hold on, you know, every single day, every single week. And for me, there's so much in the midst of this chaos and negativity that's swirling around us, so much to be thankful for. And again, I'm trying to focus on that all the way through this instead of focusing on, well, I can't believe this happened. I can't believe that happened. I'm trying to say, man, in our little world of college football, we got some games going on. And let's just enjoy it, embrace our families, and have a great week.
Herbie, well said, man. Safe travels. And fingers crossed as we remain cautiously optimistic each and every day on games that we have on the schedule.
You got it, bud.
You know, Herbie said it best. We've got much to be thankful for, and we hope that everybody is safe. And whether it's close quarters with family or whether you're Zooming, I know I'm going to be probably FaceTiming with my mom and my brother and family on Thanksgiving Day. We just hope that you guys have a great holiday. And of course, on Wednesday, we've got Pollock back with us. We've got Reese Davis joining us to talk about, you know, the day after the rankings being released and how he's now involved in the conversation when it comes to Northwestern and what they've got going on in this special season so far for them in Chicago. So until then, big thanks to Taylor Schwenk, always on the other side, making sure that we can bring you this podcast at least twice a week. I want to say thank you and be safe out there. Wear a mask and social distance. Take care.